We are back once again. Feeling pretty good. I don't know about my microphone setup here. Looks good there. But yeah, we are back. This is the ATP podcast. It's your boy Jay. Mark Figueroa is in the building. We have Alcaraz news. And this is episode 110. Microphone seems to be working well. All right, Figueroa, how are you feeling?
Pretty good. Just ready to deliver some good quality content.
Get the ball rolling. Let's do this.
Okay, so first off, Ash Barty got married over the weekend. So congratulations. She's said a thousand times. She stated she wants nothing to do with tennis. So
she's proving it.
Yeah, so congratulations and hope you do what you got to do in your other life, quote unquote. And now we're going to get to the tennis news. Now, funny story. So the San Jose Open, which is called the Silicon Valley Classic, is going on right now. I was there on Sunday. The Silicon Valley tournament starts on Monday. Barely missed it. But quick little story there. Venus Williams, we know, made her debut at the City Open. She hasn't played in a while on hard courts. So I was actually pretty shocked that she didn't play in San Jose, because if you guys saw King Richard, she actually made her professional debut at the Bank of the West Classic. That's what it was called back then.
Yeah.
So I'm actually shocked. And for this is just a little tidbits here and there. The whole Arantxa Sánchez Vicario icing Venus Williams was fake. That was just the drama to make it look more dramatic than what it really was.
Yeah.
And then Chris Evert and Martina didn't appreciate that. So I thought that was a funny little story. But anyway, now going on to the news, we got a big, big matchup in San Jose. So first off, let's talk about Osaka. She won her first round match. She hasn't played since the first round of the French Open. And now she's making her return. She will face Coco Gauff in the second round. Osaka is 2-1 against Coco Gauff.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts and predictions?
I'm going to be ambitious here, and I'm going to predict a Coco Gauff victory. I do think that Coco Gauff is coming off of an amazing run at a slam where she only lost to the best player on the tour in Iga. And she's been in rhythm for most part the entire year. She's looked pretty good. She's actually played a consistent season. And on the flip side, we've seen Osaka very in and out of the tour. So I'm going to lean with Coco Gauff here. And not say that maybe she's a better player, but I'm going to say that she's in better form right now.
Yes, I can agree with that. And just another little side note here. Coco Gauff threw out the first pitch in the Giants game over the weekend. So that was pretty cool. And quick shout out to Caroline Garcia. She won the Poland Open, beating Iga in the quarterfinals.
Wow.
She won in three on clay. And then the semis and finals, she just cruised straight sets, just thrashed everybody. So congratulations to her.
What's this mean for Iga? How's she doing, you think?
Honestly, she's been on a little bit of a... I mean, I don't want to put a lot there, but
yeah,
she's sort of just been slowly, the dominance is not as dominant.
Yeah,
so I don't know how to feel about that. What are your thoughts?
I just see the train's chugging a little slower. It seems it's a long season and she had a very long run. I'm just very curious to see if maybe she's building up another wind for the U.S. Open to complete a great year, you know, and maybe tail end it off with another slam. So we'll see how she turns out, but she just, some tournaments, no matter how a player's feeling or doing, I just expect them to really show up in top form. And events where it's a player's home country or hometown, I just expect them to really play well and win, because they have usually the hometown advantage of the support of the crowd and the cheers and the momentum. And I'm kind of blown away she lost in the quarters.
Right, so am I. Since we're talking about streaks, let's talk about Holger Rune. Now, that was the guy who made it to the semis of the French Open, kicked mommy out of the stadium. Well, he's been struggling. After making it to the it was either quarters or the semis of the French Open. Mm-hmm. He has lost five consecutive times in the first round.
Jeez.
What are your thoughts on that?
Karma, baby. No, I'm kidding. you know, I hadn't really watched him in the first place until we heard the drama about him. So I don't have any strong opinions about it outside of, you know, he's a young guy who, I mean, he had a hot draw. You know, he made his debut there, made his name get out there, but he's given me no reason to expect more. So I'm not disappointed. I don't think he's fallen off or he's lost it. I think he had a hot moment and he needs to find a way to replicate that.
Yes, he made his debut at the U.S. Open, and he took a set off of Djokovic, and everybody was making a huge deal out of that. But yeah, hopefully he can find his footing back. Now, you have some Cincy news?
I do. So, obviously, we've got that tournament starting, and I know that we're going to talk about results from Atlanta and stuff like that.
Yes, in a bit.
But Nick Kyrgios is playing doubles, and he's partnered with Jack Sock. So I wanted to know where your headspace was with that, because this is almost a foreshadowing of potential Laver Cup action. This is a good question of the dominance of Kyrgios in doubles when mixed with someone outside of Tanasi. There's a lot to dig up here. You know, he's had a really good presence with a slam win and a tournament win.
They're going to play doubles together in Cincinnati?
Yeah.
Okay, that's huge. They definitely make a good team. They've proven it in Laver Cup. They've beaten high quality competition. So I expect them to make some big news.
Cincinnati is Cincinnati City Open?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So they're playing together there. He's playing doubles and singles.
Cincinnati. The City Open is in Washington.
Okay. Sorry. So they're currently in Washington. Correct. Playing doubles together. I mixed up City and Cincinnati.
Okay.
But yeah, so they're playing together. They've already won their first round. They beat the number 3 seed in straight sets pretty casually.
Wow.
And of course, Kyrgios is in singles as well at the City Open.
Yes.
Where he's played multiple times. And I'm not going to lie to you, man. He's playing great tennis still. He's riding that momentum of Wimbledon very well. He beat Giron straight sets.
Yes.
And then he played, I want to say it was Tommy Paul. And he was seeded, Tommy Paul, 14th seed, I believe, straight sets. So he's meeting Riley Opelka, the 4th seed of the event, in his next round.
Oh, yes. He said he has a new light on tennis right now. So that's really good news.
Mm.
Now, this is a very interesting stat. So I have a big 3 stat for you.
Mm.
Okay. So matches lost after holding match point. So they've had match point, and then they've lost it. Hmm. Federer has had 24 losses when holding match point and lost.
Hmm.
Nadal has had match point 8 times and lost.
Mm-hmm.
Djokovic has had match point 3 times and lost.
Wow.
What are your thoughts on those stats?
That lets us know who the strongest closer is out the group. And, I mean, obviously we should have known that, because he's probably been... I think he probably leads the entire tour in people who were down 2 out of 5 sets and then won 3 straight. He probably has the record on the tour. So hearing that he closes when he sees a match point the most is not surprising.
Are you surprised about Federer losing 24 times holding match point?
I want to tell you I'm surprised by that because of how prestigious he is. But as someone who's been a long-time Federer fan who watched all of those matches where all those times happened, I was there. I remember all of them, and it hurt every time, because as much as you believe in Federer and he's such a great champion, in the back of your head, you always know, all right, Federer, finish it. And, you know, it's always kind of just sat on my mind, so I'm not surprised by that statistic. It's a little higher than I thought, though.
Right. I was going to say that. I'm actually shocked that it's that high.
Yeah.
I was expecting single digits similar to Djokovic and Nadal. So, but still, that shows the dominance of the big 3. So, we're going to move on to the Umag and Atlanta champion. First off, congrats to Diminor. He won Atlanta. And then, congratulations to Nick Kyrgios and Kokkinakis winning doubles.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're going to go to the Umag champion, who is the Italian Jannik Sinner.
Yes, sir. That was a big final.
That was big. Now, Alcaraz made it to back-to-back Umag finals.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Sinner is 2-0 this year against Alcaraz.
Mm.
And the hype is huge on Alcaraz.
Mm-hmm.
Are people overlooking Jannik Sinner?
I want to say no. I want to say that Jannik Sinner, I mean, I don't know if you've heard his true stat line, but his stat line is almost as hyped up as Alcaraz's. The difference, though, is he's a little bit more cold this season after having a quiet Indian Wells due to injury and kind of being a little... He's drawing some really, really massive opponents a little prematurely in his events. I think he ran into Djokovic pretty much en route to him maybe getting a semifinal at Wimbledon. He's just running into favorites for events before the semis. And I think that's kind of holding him up. And Alcaraz's debut year is this year. You know, this is the year he actually broke through. And Sinner kind of had his breakthrough last year. So I think that's where a little bit of the hype is getting redirected. But these two are our future champions. And I've heard multiple legends on the tour say that about these two specifically. And I think that, if you want me to be honest with you, we have higher hopes for them than the generation that came right before them.
Yes, I agree for sure. They're Alcaraz is just very well rounded.
Yeah,
and as we stated before, he's more complete at this age than Nadal. Mm-hmm. I just hope that he's able to win a slam at this age as Nadal did.
Yeah.
So here's some interesting stats on Alcaraz. Now everybody's all over Djokovic as the best returner. But I've talked about it multiple times that Nadal actually leads the tour in return of serves. Serves broken.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, he has a higher career stat of breaking serve than Djokovic.
Mm-hmm.
But Alcaraz, when he has won the first point of the game where the person is serving against him, he's won 51.8% of the games.
Wow.
That's 5% more than Nadal.
Sheesh.
When he has won 2 points at Love 30, he has broken at 38.4% of the time, which is higher than Nadal. And then when he has been down Love 30 and come back to win the game, he has broken at 35% of the time, which is higher than Nadal. What are your thoughts on that?
I think that it just speaks to his efficiency on the court when he's on the defensive end. I think my main concern for Alcaraz is just him having a bit more of a elite big three level offense. I think that what separates Nadal from him, for me, besides the obvious statistics, experience, and accolades, is the Nadal forehand. You know, that is probably one of the greatest forehands to ever be in the sport of tennis. And I think that's the game-changing thing for me as far as their comparisons go. Because, I mean, I'd hate to make it sound like Alcaraz doesn't have a phenomenal forehand. He's got a complete game, but I don't think that he's got such a huge weapon in that wing like Nadal did. You know, where he's creating angles from the center of the court and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting to see where he kind of compensates for that small detail.
It's funny to me because there are certain things that he does better than Nadal at that age. I didn't think that breaking was one of them.
Yeah.
I didn't think that his stats were so high. So that is pretty impressive, and I overlooked it. So I'll have to look into it more and see what he's doing a little bit different than Nadal.
Well, just to defend Nadal here, Nadal's statistic is based on a career from the age of 18 to almost 40 years old.
Yes.
So that means that he was able to maintain that quality of play through his entire career. Let's see if Alcaraz can maintain this consistent quality for a decade.
Yes.
You know, because there's a pretty high possibility that, you know, he will have a dip in performance, have off years, have injuries, and then we'll see if we can compare him to the champion and the god that is Nadal.
Exactly. Yeah. Again, the hype is right now, so everybody's making a big deal out of it. But that's what the media does.
Yeah.
So on to Laver Cup news. Now, this is huge. I can tell you one of the reasons why Kyrgios and Sock are playing right now. Mm-hmm. That is because our boy Nick Kyrgios will not play in Laver Cup.
Oh, wow.
He said that he apologized. This is one of his favorite tournaments. Mm-hmm. He said even more than a couple of Grand Slams. Mm-hmm. But he wants to spend time with family and his love, his girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Is Team World doomed?
Yes. Team World is in big, big trouble, in my opinion. I think that Kyrgios was the exact dark horse they needed to have someone who could kind of Swiss Army knife themselves into singles and doubles and really create some type of spectacle. But without him, they were already shorthanded, you know? They were already short on talent. This year is going to be a blowout, a complete destruction. So I'll still watch it, but oh, I'm nervous.
Okay, now there is a big name that committed for Team World. That is the double specialist, the AKA best doubles player in the world, better than Mike Bryan. Jack Sock. Does that make a difference for Team World?
I think it's a base requirement at this point for them to not get embarrassed out there. But Jack Sock is only one man out there, so I'm very interested to see who he'll play with. It's going to have to be a John Isner, something like that. John Isner's probably my favorite pick for him at this point to play doubles with. And I do anticipate them probably winning if those two play together. You know, they're going to hold serve well. Jack Sock's going to make some magic with that forehand. And Isner's done well at Laver Cup. He's looked good at Laver Cup. So I do think that that is good news.
Right.
But have we confirmed Isner's going to be there?
Isner has not confirmed yet.
Yeah.
And he has proven to be a good doubles player.
Yeah.
He's won with Schwartzman, and he's won with Hurkacz.
He's a good player on doubles, yeah.
Yeah, so that would be good. Now, if Isner doesn't commit, who do you think would be the missing piece to at least get a couple points for Team World?
I mean, the only people that come to mind immediately as quality teammates at all is the two Canadians. Chapo, I just don't see winning. I see him having a great match that's fun to watch, competitive, and him losing. Felix, you're going to have to match him up well with someone on Team Europe. He's got to play someone that he's a good match against. Otherwise, that's a wash. Then, you know, we get Riley Opelka.
That's what I was thinking.
You know, he gets the indoor high-speed court advantage, and we hope for the best. You know, that court does work to his favor, so that's a plus. And then from there, it's almost, I can't even think of anyone. Maybe Tiafoe if he's hot. You know, Tiafoe just lost to Brooksby. Is Brooksby's an option?
Yeah, yeah, he's an option.
Yeah, Brooksby's actually playing really well.
He can irritate in singles.
He irritates me just watching.
Yes.
He's so scrappy and annoying. So
yes.
But that play style is not as easy to do indoors. So we'll see. It'll be interesting to find out. But, you know, the ATP rankings are not friendly to the world right now. They're no. Team Europe looking, so.
Yes, Felix is already committed. So, yes, we're probably going to need an Isner. And on the bench, it's probably going to be Brooksby sounds good to me.
Yeah.
So that would be an interesting pick. So we'll see if Isner even commits. Mm-hmm. So you said you had some Djokovic news?
I do, actually. So there was a lot of drama around negative press for Djokovic and how he's never doing anything good and all these different things about him. And a story came out. And the story was officially stating that he's been actively supporting the future of Serbian tennis. So they stated, Novak Djokovic has been taking care of all the financial costs of rising Serbian star Hamad Medrovic. And to help him kickstart his professional career. This is a quote. And this is from the father of Medjkovic. I remember the second conversation I had with Novak ever. I don't know. I don't really have a good accent for this, so I'm going to make one up. Where he speak about specific steps in Hamad's career. Novak was presenting me with ideas what to do with Hamad's game. And I remember telling him, Noel, I'm sorry, but the things you are talking about cost a lot of money. And he just keeps going about coaches and what we are going to do and how. And then it says, all Hamad needs to do is work hard. I will take care of the rest. Quoted from Djokovic.
Trash accent, bro.
I don't know what else to do.
Not bad. That was decent. That was decent.
This is the last quote. And this is Djokovic responding to his father. Edo, I am not here. I am not doing this for the money. I make my money elsewhere. My role here is to help. What kind of man would I be if I would not help the kinds that deserve it? That love tennis, and on top of that, achieve good results. You know what we are going to do? One day, when Hamad makes it, you're going to take someone under your wing and help them in the same way. Big Novak paying it forward and helping Serbia's future of tennis replace him. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I heard about that actually. Mm. And I mean, he's been getting such negative press lately that I'm going to assume he's doing it because he really wants to help and not to get positive press. So I'm going to go with he's trying to really help out his countrymen.
Mm-hmm.
And if that's the case, then that's good for him.
Okay. What do you actually think?
I think that he's doing it for the press.
Yeah.
He's getting such a negative press right now that anything positive is going to help.
We will find out in time.
Yes. And speaking of Djokovic, there was a petition signed by a people for him to be able to play at the U.S. Open. Obviously, the U.S. Open isn't going to budge. There are laws. It is what it is. And Djokovic said he was hopeful to be able to play, so he was prepping as if he was able to play anyway.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on people actually supporting Djokovic?
It's interesting because I know that a lot of people may not hate Djokovic so much as they love Nadal. And so I thought that might be incentive for people to not sign a petition for him because they're going to go, hey, I don't care if he does or doesn't go, but I do care if Nadal has a shot at winning, which would be a reason not to help out Djokovic. So that was kind of where my head was at with the U.S. Open. I know a lot of the U.S. tennis fan base are Team Federer or Team Nadal. Not a lot of them are Team Djokovic, so it's interesting to see that he won't be playing, but I think that another reason he definitely has no chance is this monkeypox flare-up thing.
Yes.
It's just got people a little sensitive to any form of contagious diseases or any form of anything that can be transmitted or caught. It's just got people that were on the cool now back on alert and stuff like that. So, you know, with the country on high alert again for a separate disease, it's not helping the COVID case.
No, it's not. And now the last topic, Goran makes a bold prediction. Now, he's been making extremely big predictions lately, saying that Alcaraz will not reach Djokovic, Federer, Nadal level, that he knew that Nadal and Djokovic would surpass Federer. But now this is his biggest prediction of them all. He said that if barring any injury, Djokovic at least has 5 more years in his career, and that he's predicting 30 Grand Slams by the end of his tenure. So in 5 years, he will win 10 majors. So that is 2 a year. Wow. Do you agree with Goran Ivanišević?
He's going to have to do some 3 packs in there. There's no way he's doing 2 a year for 5 years. I just don't believe that. I do believe that he has a long career ahead of him. I really do. I think he'll be a threat for a long time. But I just don't see him winning the U.S. Open or the French Open, both, every year. I just don't. I could see him getting that Australian Open. I could see that. I believe that. The other 3, those are tough with the age thing and all that. Over these next couple of years, though, I really do believe he has an opportunity to get 3 out of 4. You know, it's going to really depend on the health of Nadal and these rising coming stars making a difference, because right now they're not threats.
Exactly. So he's still favored at Wimbledon. He's won multiple Wimbledon titles. So he's definitely favored there. At the U.S. Open, I really don't see it at all.
Yeah.
Now, on clay, I believe that if Nadal retires early, earlier than him, he'll be the favorite.
Yeah.
He's proven that he's the second best clay courter in the world.
Yeah.
He's beaten Nadal multiple times on clay at the French Open. Tsitsipas had him 2-0. Djokovic won. Musetti had him 2-0. Djokovic won. So Berrettini, Djokovic won.
Yeah.
So he's proven that these guys can't phase him on clay.
Yeah.
And his play style is perfect for clay.
Yes, it is.
And then on Australia, he's always going to be a favorite there.
Yeah.
So I can see him winning two a year.
Yeah.
If he remains healthy enough.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I could see it optimistically, I guess. But we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, it's 30's a lot. It's a lot. I definitely, if Goran said that Djokovic was going to take the slam title lead, I go, yeah, I believe that. 30's, that's a crazy number.
Yes.
That's a crazy number.
To a year for 5 years.
Yeah, we'll see. So here's a funny, not really a stat, but a funny thought process for me. So we had an all-time slam winner when I first started watching tennis back in 2009 or 8 or whenever that was, when I started seriously watching every tournament. And everyone just said, Pete Sampras, all-time slam leader. And I want to ask you, how long do you think Pete Sampras was the all-time slam leader before that got washed out?
A couple years,
you know, before people were already breathing on his back for it. And it makes me wonder, is the next slam leader that breaks the record that the big three have, is he already alive and playing tennis?
I think that this one is going to take a lot longer than Pete.
Yeah.
For sure. Right now, I mean, as you stated earlier, I can see Alcaraz up there.
Yeah.
Jannik Sinner, he had Djokovic at Wimbledon. So that crop, I can see. Mm-hmm. The upper, I can't see them right now.
Yeah.
You're 28, you're 29-year-olds. They can't compete to me.
Even if those guys, let's say that, for example, Nick Kyrgios just lights on fire and he's great on all tournament surfaces. Do you know how many slams a year you have to win when you wait this long to get your first one?
Right.
You know, that's a lot. You know, Djokovic, Federer, Nadal, these guys started getting slams in their early 20s, possibly their teens. So,
yes, Nadal at 19.
Yeah, so for these guys, you know, it's a big head start. So I think you're right. I think it'll have to be on the shoulders of the really young guys, which means it's going to take another decade minimum.
Yes.
You know, so I'm looking forward to seeing if those guys have a future like that and if it can happen, because the difference between Djokovic, Nadal, and Federer with those guys is they had to play each other to get their slams.
Right.
This younger generation, they don't have a trifecta or a quad of players to beat.
Exactly. So it may be sooner than we expect.
Yeah.
So with that, we conclude this episode. I hope you guys were entertained.
Before we do, I have one more little tidbit for you.
Okay.
This is a quote from Nick Kyrgios. Nick Kyrgios claims to be the most fined tennis player in history. By his own estimates, he says, he's paid almost $800,000 in fines since the start of his career. That means that the Australian has lost 8% of his career earnings through bad behavior. Winning Wimbledon's $2.5 million jackpot would give Kyrgios a nice budget for future fines, though. That's their basic statement. And so they're basically saying he's won $10 million on the tour, and he's paid $800K in fines for his whole career. Of course, $800K is his estimate, but what's your thoughts on those numbers?
Man, okay, he's a very righteous person when it comes to the rules, and he'll stand up for it, and instead of just backing down, he'll just keep going at it. He'll keep nitpicking and nitpicking, because he's always, Nadal takes 45 seconds.
Yeah.
I take 25 and they're on me. This guy threw a racket. I barely hit the ball and I'm getting fined, and he'll just make a big deal out of it. I think that if he were to calm that part down, he wouldn't have been as fined so much and people wouldn't be on him.
I agree. I think there's a method to his madness. I think he plays better tennis inside of a storm of chaos. I think that if a match is too quiet, he's like, I need to get crazy in here.
Well, in that case, his tactic is working.
Yeah, so that was my last little tidbit before we wrapped up this episode.
If he has the dough, another 10% to just pay the fines, go for it. Do your thing.
Hey, if he can just do semifinals at Wimbledon, finals at Wimbledon, he'll be able to pay whatever fines he accumulates.
In that case, do your thing, Kyrgios. So this time, for reals, I hope you guys were entertained.
Adios.